So it was kind of that like physicality that I knew from my opera days, but in a format that I felt like was instantly accessible to like people right here, right now.
That's Joanna Birkebeil. I'm Jamie Green, and this is Trading Fours. We know it unless that someone is you. I intend to be independently blue. I want your love, don't want to borrow. Have it today to give back tomorrow. Your love is my love, there's no love for nobody else. Just take it. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Trading Fours. I hope you're hanging in there. And can't believe it, but we're actually getting really close to Thanksgiving, so I know it's probably not a normal Thanksgiving for you and your family, but I hope you're doing whatever you can to make it as normal as possible. I'm super stoked because my oldest son actually made it through an entire semester without having to be sent home with the COVID outbreak from college. So he went early, went through 15 weeks, and I'm actually going to go up and pick him up on Monday. So super excited about that. Going to be so great to see him and have him home for a while. Hey, today's guest is Joanna Birkebeil, and she's great. Joanna has got a new album out. We're going to talk all about that. We're going to talk about how she grew up in Delaware, but now she finds herself in Kansas City. We're going to talk about how she was an opera singer, and now she's singing jazz. We're even going to talk about her dad's 80s rock band, which I told her to send me a picture. I want to see the old man in the 80s band, but she hasn't done that yet, but hopefully soon. But before we get started, real quick, once again, down in the show notes, you can see a place where you can click on a link and you can subscribe to me on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe to me on Spotify. And I also put down there a link with my email address. So if you've got some input, that would be great. I think it's absolutely fabulous that one of the places that I'm getting a lot of downloads is India, of all places. So if you are in India right now and listening to this, I would love to know how you discovered me. I'd love to know how you're liking it. But yeah, it's really, there's been a ton of downloads from India. So that's really cool. Love that we're international. So Joanna actually got on my radar because she was doing a Facebook Live event out of her garage, because that's what musicians do in 2020. You play in a garage, you play in a parking lot, you play wherever. Try to be safe and but still perform. So I dug it and I reached out to her and she's super friendly and said, yeah, I'd like to do that. So we set this up and we're going to talk all about our new album. So let's get started. Here's my conversation with Joanna Birkebeil. First off, well, Joanna, thanks so much for joining me. And I know 2020 is a crazy year and probably wasn't what you were expecting when you were recording this new album.
We roll with it.
Yeah, well, I think that should be the slogan for the year. So I appreciate it. So first off, tell me a little bit. I know I looked at your bio a little bit and that you're not actually from Kansas City, that you moved here. So tell me about growing up, where you grew up.
Well, I come from the great state, exciting state of Delaware. Which many people have driven through on their journeys on 95 on the East Coast. Yeah. And I think Delaware was featured on, what was that, some kind of cartoon. We're like, oh yeah, that was from, anyway, whatever. So I grew up in Delaware, near the University of Delaware.
Blue Hens, right?
And Newark. So it's like three stops on 95. Well, if you made over that way.
But, you know, the president-elect, though, is from Delaware. So now
I know. Well, I grew up with, I grew up with Uncle Joe, you know, as my senator.
There you go.
For many, many years. So anyway, I don't really have any commentary on that. That has nothing to do with anything we're talking about. I enjoyed it. You know, I'm just kind of a suburban girl. Delaware is a pretty chill place. Honestly, not too crazy different than the Midwest, other than the infrastructure there is just, you know, the East Coast culture is a little more, it's a little more crowded. It's a little more like hustle bustle. So the Midwest is kind of a nice, like, breath of fresh air for me. But it's, when people ask me where I'm from, I say, it depends on the context, but I usually say I'm from Kansas City, because this is really where I've felt like I've come into my own. I've built my life. I'm also a realtor. So that's my other business that, you know, keeps me excited, jumping out of bed in the morning, creative, and it makes money.
Well, that's important when you're a musician.
So I am a part-time professional at this point, with the door very much open to any other possibilities.
So why'd you come out here? What made you come to Kansas City?
My husband's job. So he's a computer engineer. We lived in Washington, the Washington, D.C. area for 6-7 months, whatever. That whole area for us as a young couple, I mean, I was 21. He was in his mid-20s. And it was just a rat race. I mean, we were both working our butts off and just trying to live and not being able to save any money. It was just, it was just rough. And I mean, experiences like, it's Christmas time, yay, and I'm going to the mall to go shopping, and I couldn't get to the mall. Like, there's too many people. I can't even get where I'm going. I'm going to turn around and go back home. Forget it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We so my wife is an attorney. She doesn't practice anymore. But she went to American University in DC for undergrad. And then this is kind of an aside, but I'll get to the point, I promise. So when I was done with graduate school, I actually had an offer to be a presidential management scholar or presidential management intern or whatever. So it was like pretty cool, like a high esteem thing. And I was probably going to work in the State Department and all this stuff. And she wanted and we actually went out to DC and looked at it. And to your point, it's such a rat race. It's so expensive. You have to work a bazillion hours. It's super competitive. It's super, you know, if you're going to buy a house, you hope maybe you'll find it the last on the metro stop. You might be able to afford that, but probably not, you know? So we didn't do it.
It's the Midwest is ultimately we are here because the Midwest is a reasonable place. It is not the most beautiful place in the world, but Kansas City is very reasonable. It's friendly as they go. It's a supportive community. We've made so many wonderful friends here. The music scene was a lovely surprise to me that I discovered pretty quickly, but I really had no idea about the music scene in Kansas City before I moved here. I came searching for it, but even if I hadn't been searching for it, I would have found out about it some way.
So what year did you move here?
2012.
Okay.
Yeah, January 2012, I think it was. So is that right? I feel like, we've been here almost a decade.
Okay. Yeah. So you were an opera singer. So talk to me about that.
So opera kind of found me because when I was a kid, I was homeschooled. That's just kind of an aside. So my first real exposures to like music as a thing other than on the radio, you know, was my church choir. So the adults let me hang out up there, like even as like an 8-year-old kid, like I was a little like on the choir loft, like my head was right here. and then the homeschool choir, which was really nice in the tri-state area, there was kind of a homeschool network that provided extracurriculars and things so that, you know, we weren't too like, ooh, geeky, you know, like we actually got to talk to people and be socialized and do sports and music and new things. So anyway, I did that because it was kind of there and thing to do. And it became pretty evident. I mean, probably I've been singing my entire life. I can't remember like, my first musical note coming out of my mouth.
Right.
My dad's a musician, so.
Oh, is he? What's he play?
I have some pretty crazy photos. I didn't bring them today, but of my dad in an 80s rock band.
Oh, well, sweet.
He's wearing red pleather pants. So now I know why I'm here. My mom just
asked me to dance it. What did he play?
I was creating. So
what did he play?
He plays a lot of instruments actually. But he played bass in the band.
What was the name of the band? I have to ask.
What's that?
What was the name of his band? I have to ask.
I'll remember it in a few minutes. I can't remember.
No worries. Hey, hang on a second. I'll show you. Let's see this shoulder. That's a picture of one of my dad's big bands.
Oh, sweet. Oh, okay. I can't quite see.
Yeah, I'll show it to you later. but that's funny. You know, so much music I think goes in families, right? It's very, you know, it's interesting. Yeah,
and all my siblings have gotten that gene as well. We all sing, we dance, we tell jokes, we play the guitar. I don't play the guitar, but we all have music in our blood. My brother does musical theater. My other brother is a semi-professional dancer. And my sister can certainly carry a tune, write music, and she plays the guitar. So anyway.
You guys are fun at Christmas then.
Oh yeah, and I grew up thinking it was normal.
Right.
Or like if we went on a road trip somewhere that we would sing in front of her. That was just what families did. But apparently that's not normal. So, and we actually sound good. Like, no, yeah. I'm not just patting ourselves on the shoulder.
That's funny. You're the first person I've had that had opera training. So opera is a special animal. I know a lot of it is, you know, so much of, because it was made for before there were microphones and being able to project, and it's a special skill set. So I'm curious about how you took that and then translated it into jazz.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing because I never anticipated. I mean, for so long, just because of the trajectory I was on was basically like, okay, I take the teachers who I have, you know, with me, and then, you know, I don't know, I'm just a little lump of proverbial clay. So, you know, basically I had one teacher pass me off to another teacher who passed me off to another teacher. Not because I was that much trouble, I don't think, but because they basically were like, I've taught you what I know. You need to go to my, so it was basically the teacher I had in high school or early high school, middle school was like, you need to go to like a collegiate level. So I actually went to a college professor who was recommended to me. And then when he reached a certain point with me, and he was also making plans to move, he was like, I need to give you to my teacher. And that just happened to be in the sort of classical opera track. So that's kind of where I didn't have an agenda for myself from the beginning of like, ooh, I want to sound like this, or ooh, I want to do this. I don't, you know, it wasn't like I grew up listening to country music and I want to be a country music star. It was just like, oh, these are the teachers. They're obviously good teachers. And the thing that I have always appreciated and appreciated more in retrospect is that my teachers, the trajectory of all that was to teach me to sing very healthily and to honor mechanic and health. Like it's a physical thing. It's almost a sport.
Right.
You know? It's not just like, oh, you know, I've got a good ear and let me manipulate my voice to make it sound a certain way. It's like I was taught from a very early age, you know, your instrument is what it is, and to value health and the natural mechanic of my voice in over trying to manipulate a sound to impress people or impress myself or whatever. So authenticity and health are like this. They are connected, and those are things that I value above anything else.
Yeah. No, I don't think that that's why most rock guys that were screaming in their 20s, they can't do it in their 40s because they weren't singing properly, blew their voice out.
I've had some disturbing conversations because I used to have a rock band. I don't know if you look up Counting the Quiet was my rock band in Kansas City for a while. We're good. Unfortunately, it all fell apart due to personnel issues.
Yeah, well, that's how it usually goes.
Yeah. But I've heard that whole world. I had some particularly disturbing conversations with fellow rock singers who were like, yeah, man, you gotta bleed your voice.
Right.
And I was like, you have to what? Lead your voice? I don't think so.
Right. So well, there was this misnomer for years that guys wanted to smoke 3 packs of cigarettes, you know, a day because they thought that made their voice. And it was terrible idea.
That is totally antithetical to everything that I believe about the voice, the human voice.
Right. So obviously you're in Kansas City. You said you were doing a little rock and roll. So when did the jazz bug bite you? And what bit you about it?
Well, it kind of went from classical to blues rock to jazz. And some of that had, it was all mashed up together, but some of that really just had to do with like who I knew and who I came in contact with, you know, quote unquote randomly or whatever. The blues was first. I ended up like just ending up going to different places that had some pretty kick-ass blues stuff going on. And I had never experienced anything like that live. It just wasn't like live music performance really wasn't other than classical, you know, where it's like, I'm on a stage and y'all got to sit down and shut up and clap at the end. It was very active and very like, wow, you know, this is, and it also struck me as like, from the gut and very healthy and very like, you know, this very physical experience, which totally made sense to me. So it was kind of that like physicality that I knew from my opera days, but in a format that I felt like was instantly accessible to like people right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to kind of feel like opera, I was in love with the excellence of it at the time, but I was starting to feel like something was missing for me in that, and I found that the missing piece was that I didn't feel I was performing, but not communicating. Does that make sense?
So absolutely, like, it makes sense.
It didn't feel like a two-way experience where like the giving and receiving, the flowing of like I'm singing and this person's dancing. And, you know, like in the opera world, it's a lot of like observing of excellence. Kind of like when you go to an art gallery. I love going to art galleries, but it's a different, like, maybe some people would argue with me on this, but you have to take, you have to approach, you know, that world of, let's call it high art. Although I don't know if I believe in high art and low art or whatever. It's good or it's not. It connects with you or it doesn't. But you have to come to that world with a lot more knowledge and background to get it and to really be part of that communication, as opposed to like, I felt like blues and jazz was like immediate.
Yeah.
Like I can sing blues and jazz and people get it right away. And I'm not stuck in this world of like, oh, wow, that was amazing. Clap, 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 clap.
Yeah.
You know, I got really tired of impressing people. That came out wrong. That sounds cocky, but like it's kind of worthless to me. I don't really care about impressing people. I want to entertain, I want to know, I want to communicate, not just like people.
Perform.
It's not boring for people to be like, oh, wow, that was amazing. That was great. And I knew that they didn't really feel anything.
Right. Well, I think as a performer, I certainly know this is the case for me, and I'm guessing it's the same for you. Watching people's reactions, whether that's just a smile on their face or if they jump up and want to dance to the song or whatever, that's what I find the most value in playing live music is that you get to watch how people react and get oh my God, I can't believe they're playing that, and they have fun. And you know, and to your point with opera, which is, you know, it's a great art form, and I would never say anything despairing about it, but you're right. It's very much more fastidious. It's very much more about the decorum of sitting, like you said, correctly and being quiet until the end and stuff. Whereas if somebody hoots, if you hit a great note in a blues or a rock or a jazz song, somebody, you know, says, you know, that's great. Not only is that appropriate, musicians will love it. So yeah, I totally
get it. It's part of the experience. Although I do find it funny, you know, I would like to see, who knows how that could go, but people don't realize before Wagner, you know, and his like crazy ideas about everybody got to sit down and shut up and listen to my awesome art.
Right.
Like at the time of like Mozart and whatever, an opera house was more like a blues bar, you know, yep. Like everybody got dressed up. It was a place to show off, you know, but people were talking, people were drinking, you know, people would hoot and holler. Like that was something going on, you know, but it was more of a, you know, immediate thing. So people have this idea of like opera on a pedestal that I don't know if it will ever change, because that's just how it's morphed culturally.
Oh yeah. I think it's going to be that probably forever, which yeah. is interesting. We don't have to get too much into the weeds, but I know that they're always trying to get more butts in the seat for opera. And I think that's one of the things that you fight. You know, people already have ADHD in our current culture, and sitting somewhere for 3 hours and not doing much, yeah, kind of a hard sell.
I do find though, I feel like that experience is valuable. Like going to a 3 hour play or a 3 hour opera or whatever. I believe that it is good for the mind.
Yeah, I agree.
Even good for the soul, because we're so used to this, like, you know, oh, click. Oh, you know, someone could be listening to this interview and be like, ah, this is boring. Click, 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 and click to the
they
next.
They would never do that with you as my guest, Joanna. They would never.
Well, you know, but if you're thinking of doing that, you guys out there, you better
That's
stop.
Right.
Don't click that button.
That's right. So I want to talk to, let's talk about the album a little bit. So the album is Love Me or Leave Me, correct?
Yes.
And you've got a bunch of tracks. I laughed, especially in the current culture, that your first tune is called A Gentleman is a Dope. So I assume that's a takeoff of the Lady is a Tramp, correct?
No, that's oh gosh, now I'm gonna, I wish I had my cheat sheet with me. I don't have a copy of my album, but that's an old song. That's, I didn't write that. So.
No, I didn't think you wrote it, but I'm just wondering, you know, Lady is a Tramp is such, you know, Sinatra sang that and everything. So I just like the fact that this is a woman's cape, you know, a guy's a dope. I just kind of, there was a little bit of whimsy to that tune, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, my idea when I picked, I mean, these are not only some of my favorite tunes, but I realized that some of my favorite quote unquote standards, some of these are not quite as standard.
Right.
I tried to mix it up a little bit, but, the theme of this, which I thought was encapsulated by Love Me or Leave Me, period, was like, there's a lot of tunes that are like, oh, I love you, I adore you, and this whole like, oh,
right.
You know, thing. I wanted some like, I almost wanted character pieces of like if you were meeting different people randomly and they were telling you about their current love life, you know, it's not all, oh, I adore you and put you on a pedestal and love is amazing. You know, sometimes you're like, I'm in love with this guy, but he's stupid. Like,
right.
He's not even cute. Okay. That's weird.
And love can be messy.
Right. Yeah. Messy, weird, you know, or like, you know, what's the song? Is You Is or Is You Ain't? I have always loved that one. And yep. That one goes into kind of like, you know, that's where the jazz and blues start hanging out together, because
yep.
they're really, you know, they're what, siblings, cousins, I don't know.
I think that they're very much based in the, you know, if you go back to what Louis Armstrong was doing in New Orleans, mm-hmm. It's very blues based. It kind of divulged. I don't know why I keep doing things with my hands. This is only going to be on audio, but so on the album, let's give a shout out to the people who played on it. So who all played on it?
Oh, yes. Okay. Absolutely. So I have Leslie McLean on the piano, and she is also not only an amazing pianist, but she also did all the arrangements of these tunes, which gave them fresh life. And the arrangements were made for us. You know, it wasn't just like, oh, she wrote these years ago. She knew who the ensemble would be, and she created these for us. So like, oh, hats off.
Yeah, that's its own art form.
Yeah, yeah. Really, and that's not something that I excel in. No. My thing that I excel in is I sing, and I right. sing really well, but I don't play the piano. I do right. not arrange things.
Yeah, my dad could do arrangements, which kind of makes me jealous now. I used to watch him do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got her on the keyboards and arranging.
Yes. Yeah. And then her husband, actually, Jerry Pollock. So they're a dynamic duo. He plays drums and he's also my co-producer. So Jerry, not only an excellent drummer, but I must say, like, the excellence of this album and like the behind the scenes process of, like, cause I've never come out with an album before. This is all new to me. I've been recording before, but it's really not been like my 100% my project.
Mm-hmm.
So his experience just like, and he's gone way above and beyond what he ever had to do, to kind of guide me from his past experience on the do's and don'ts of the recording process and production and getting this album out to the world too. We've actually hired a marketing company that, as I speak, are sending out my album to all different jazz stations across the country and the world. So that's very exciting. I never would have known how to access that without him. And then Tim Brewer is a more recent acquaintance of mine, but through Jerry and Leslie, they have performed with him many times, and he just knows how to, like, you know, he came to the project not late, but kind of like we approached him and said, hey, you want to do this with us? We already pretty much had the arrangements and everything. We gave him the arrangements. He showed up to the first rehearsal. We only had 3 rehearsals, really? With all of us. And he just brought his A game and just said, oh, how does this sound? Oh, yeah. Okay, great. I mean, that was amazing. I mean, everyone did that, but that felt really good to me because that's what I was used to in the classical world. So I love that about when I can get it in the jazz world, the like commitment to the excellence of like, yeah, okay, this is fun. This is communication. This is real live music, but you better know your stuff.
Yeah, well, this town, and obviously Tim's your bassist, you were doing an upright bass kind of kabuki dance for the people that were just listening to this. So,
yes.
So, you know, it's so interesting you say that. So I've, you know, this podcast is a little over a year old, and I kind of had a pretty good idea of how much talent there was in this town. But when you really delve into it, there's a lot of really talented, really special, really good musicians in this town that can do like what you said, that they can walk into a situation and are so good at their craft that they can look at a chart. Like, you could just say, I want to play All of Me. I want to play it in, I don't know, A flat, and go. And they can do it.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. Yeah.
That was not the reason why I got into jazz. But once I started getting into jazz, I was like, ooh, okay, I like this. Like, this is what was that level of excellence was what was expected of me when I was engaged in the classical music world. It's like, here's your opera score. Go learn it. Come to rehearsal. And you better already know it. This is for fine tuning, not for mucking around. And, oh, what do you think about? This note, like, no, you come prepared. so
when you listen to jazz singers, Joanna, who are the people that you're like, I mean, obviously you want to put your own stamp on it, you want it to be yourself, but who are the people that you listen to and vocally and you think, wow, I like how, you know, how they approach a song, or I like vocally what they're doing with the song, or who are those people?
Well, you know, it's funny, I started singing jazz before I really was listening to jazz on a regular basis. I almost listened to jazz so that I can sing jazz now. It's a little bit weird. It wasn't like, oh, I listened to Ella Fitzgerald and, oh, I wanna do that. I wanna sound like that. It actually, for me, came more from like, I experienced a live music experience and I wanted it to be part of that experience. Mm-hmm. So that's, I don't know. I haven't thought too much about that until now, but.
Well, I'm glad I stumped you.
Yeah. But I, you know, looking into, okay, who are my influences or whatever? I mean, okay, everybody likes Ella Fitzgerald, but you know, the reason why people like Ella Fitzgerald is because she's 100% genuine.
Yeah.
And not, there is nothing artificial. There's nothing like artificially poised, or like, she didn't approach any of her performances or recordings with a preconceived, I know, because I can tell, a preconceived notion of like, oh, I want people to think this about me and I'm going to manipulate my voice to do it. No, she just had unbridled and like authenticity with her voice.
She's, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but her stuff is excellent. And I would tell you, you were talking about excellent musicians and collaboration and bringing something and being prepared. You know, she did a bunch of stuff with Joe Pass, the phenomenal guitar player. And there's this stuff, there's these recordings of them like in a studio in Germany in like 1975, where they just show up and they're just both. It's just ridiculous how good they are and how much they're listening to what each other is doing. Because I think that's what music really is. It's a collaboration. It's a conversation. It's a, you know, and it's in that, especially live music, it's a specific moment in time that is not ever going to be exactly replicated. It's almost like walking on a tightrope in a way, right? Mm-hmm. So if except people are listening still, if they haven't turned us off, Joanna, yeah. I'll put in the show notes up on YouTube a link to that, because that's really cool.
It's cool. That's really great. Yeah, I love to see those like intimate moments of musical communication, but I also just love the laughter in her voice. You know, you can tell. I actually don't know too much about her personally, although I probably should. But that whole, I don't know, even the joy that comes out of it. So I just like that.
Do you know how she got discovered?
You know, I don't know.
See, she actually, they had an open mic night kind of thing at the Apollo in Harlem. And apparently the crowd at the Apollo was very, I don't want to say critical, probably critical, discerning. So it took like a lot of guts just to go walk in front of, you know, the Apollo crowd. Apparently they'd boo you off the stage if you weren't bringing it.
Oh, sure.
That's and she, hard. I think she was like 17 or some ungodly young age, 18, 17. And she went up to the audition. She went and did it. And she, of course, is Ella Fitzgerald. And even at that young age, she stuff. And so she won the contest. And there was somebody in the audience that heard her. And that's how she got signed. So there you go.
Yeah, I totally identify with that, although I did not know that story. Yeah, I've always thought like, heck, why not? You know, and that comes from a natural, I mean, I would assume she was like, hey, this is the scene. This is what's up. This is like, and I know how to sing. It would be stupid for me not to.
Right.
So I've always approached music that way. Although honestly, I used to be very shy. I am not shy anymore. But I would say I definitely give credit to my voice to really shake me out of that as a, you know, teenager, where like I realized this is ridiculous. Like my life is going to be very boring if I don't get off my butt, forget about what other people are thinking of me, and go with what I know I'm good at. Now, if I'm not so good at it, okay, well, whatever, not a big deal. But you know, this is my thing. It's my forte. So
yeah. No, I totally get that.
Yeah.
So I first became aware of you because you were on Facebook doing these concerts out of your garage, I think. Where were you? You were in a driveway. You were somewhere.
It was my garage. Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah, that's funny.
Well, it's 2020, right? So you gotta adapt. You gotta figure out how to perform and do it safely and still have fun. So
yeah, we did a few of those. I that totally different ensemble than I recorded with. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of the Kansas City scene. It's like, I know a lot of people. So if we want to, you know, if I get an idea for a gig like that, or actually that was really my friend Joe, he plays bass. He started doing it and then I joined in with him. And then I was like, hey, let's do one up north at my house. And, you know, it was just something to kind of keep us
absolutely
going. But I enjoy actually the whole thing about me having my own band. I actually was just kind of going to jams and dropping in on other people's projects and kind of developing relationships like that. Mm-hmm. And then how my band got started was I went to this place called Repeal 18th in Kansas City. It was new. I don't really know what's the scoop going on there now with anything. But anyway, at the time it was new and I was like, huh, this place feels like it should have some jazz and I wonder what their plans were. So I talked to the bartender. I was like, hey, what's the scoop? Are there going to be live bands here? And he said, yes. And I'm actually booking him. Do you know any jazz bands? And I said, well, yes, I have a jazz band. So if you're listening out there, Mr. Bartender, sorry about that, but not so sorry.
Right.
So he was like, oh, yeah, really? Oh, cool, cool, cool. What's it called? And I was like, I'm the Joanna Berkey Bile Jazz Quartet. So then I had to make up a band from there, but I knew that I knew enough people that I could book a gig and then create a band for the gig.
Right.
So that's just what I've continued doing. Although I have kind of like my sphere of people that I'm like, okay, if this bassist can't do it, then I'll call this bassist.
Yeah. Which you can do
that's,
here.
That's lovely. The sort of plug and play element of that is fun.
That's great. So, you know, I know there's been a lot of announcements with a couple different vaccines and fingers crossed and stuff. So let's say these are successful and we're all actually get to go out and play live gigs indoors and not feel like we're going to die doing it. What are your plans for 2021? What would you like? What's like optimal for you?
Well, so you can't, well, nobody can really tell right now, but so in May, I'm actually having a baby.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was a secret or not, so I didn't ask.
No, it's not a secret. I put it on Facebook.
Okay. So congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you. Yes, yes. So that's very exciting. First kiddo, and just found out it's a girl.
No,
so she's going to be nice. Exactly like me and also have a jazz band. Which,
there you go.
You know, you hear that down there? Yeah, so anyway, that will probably be taking up some of my time.
Yeah, however, it will.
yes. However, I this is the first time in my life, you know, I've been married for 10 years and, you know, I didn't get married and have a baby right away. I didn't follow that trajectory. Either way is fine. But for me, I really just kind of wanted to explore myself, my life, get my feet under me. Now I have a jazz band, a business, you know, a home. All these things. So this is the first time in my life where I feel like I can have, you know, and all you parents out there, don't laugh at me, but I really think, you know, having a kid, my husband and I, you know, we're so far an awesome team, but I feel like for the first time in my life, it's not something where I'm thinking, oh God, I'm going to have to give up, fill in the blank. Like in past years, I thought, oh, if I had a kid, I would have to stop singing. Or I would have to dial down my real estate business or whatever. It's not really my intention. I may have to shift around some time and energy for sure. But I think my intent is to carve out some time, like middle of next year is all about the Berkey Bean.
Berkey Bean.
But by the end of next year, I would like to have a second album in process.
Okay. I'd
like to see. And that's regardless of whatever the Rona decides to do, I don't really care.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a parent. My older son is a freshman in college, which kind of blows my mind. And I'm one of those people, I don't give other parents to be advice unless they want it, because I've always felt like everybody was just ready to delve in and tell you all these things and scare the crap out of you. And I just don't feel like that's helpful. It's just like, and it's like, we have two boys and neither time we told anybody what their names were going to be, because I have seen people like say like, oh, I'm going to name it such and such. And somebody, oh, I hate that name. You know, people do what you want, you know, do what you want. That's great.
I actually appreciate so far everybody who I've told, which is pretty much everybody at this point, is like, they either are like, you know, just super encouraging and say encouraging words, or give me like one nugget.
Yeah.
About like, hey, here's my nugget about parenting or whatever. And I appreciate that. I think because I can, if it's one nugget, not a sermon, I can take it or leave it. And I appreciate that. I'm a very candid person myself. So I'm never offended if somebody's like, hey, I think blah. Well, if I disagree, I don't sit and cry about it, because that's it's fine. Like, I can just disagree.
That's great.
That's okay.
So your album, what's if I was said, Joanna, give me a tune off this album that really encapsulates who you are as a singer and as a person, what do you pick?
I can't really say which one, because I mean, I enjoy the spectrum of things. I mean, I will say kind of one of the outliers on the album is Temptation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Tom Waits tune.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's cool.
I actually, this is weird. Who cares? It's not that weird. But, you know, I would actually say Tom Waits is a huge influence for me. Because again, it's that like, okay, he's not at all like Ella Fitzgerald. But there's this unabashed weirdness that also has an underlying current of like, actually, you know what? You do know what you're doing. But you are like, he's hilarious and he's weird. And, you know, like he's got this tune called The Piano Has Been Drinking.
Yeah.
And it's just this repetitive thing. It's almost like a comedy monologue where he's playing the piano and getting more and more drunk. And he's talking about, he's just hallucinating all these weird things. And that stuff speaks to me. I say I was raised in the wilds of Delaware by Muppets because that was like my favorite show as a kid where like, you know, this wacky, this like just not afraid. I grew up not afraid to be genuine and to find an excuse to laugh because absurdity is. So I would say Tom Waits, you know, I would love to meet him sometime. I loved having a Tom Waits tune on my album.
No, that's great. That makes it fun. You got to have fun with it. You know, you could do the same song that everybody has done, but if you do some different songs, so I'll have to later. So my wife's cousin, who's a jazz singer, who's out in Los Angeles, she did an album. And so she took like, she did Fire and Ice, the Pat Benatar song, but she did it as a jazz song. She did Bathwater, the No Doubt tune. It's like a retro, you know, she did a Sardet tune. She did a bunch of stuff. So that's cool that you do that. That's much more fun than playing, you know, recording the 9,000 version of, or actually be 900,000 version of Autumn Leaves, right?
I don't think I'll have Autumn Leaves on any of my albums, but
which is a great tune, but it's been done so much.
I mean, I love, it's good, but anyways, I that one also just like Love Me or Leave Me was a heck of a lot of fun to record. It's fast. My first, I think the first recording that I heard was a Nina Simone. I love Nina Simone. I love listening to singers who I will never sound like. I don't ever, like, there's no way anyone would ever listen to like one note for me and one note for Nina Simone and ever think that it was the same person. Like, it's impossible. So I love her quality of voice. It's like rich, deep, like amazing, flexible though, like super, just very flexible voice. So her version of Love Me or Leave Me, I heard that and was like, ooh, bookmark, I want that one. And it's just fun. It goes off at this pace. It's the only album, it's the only tune on the album where I scat. And I've always been a little hesitant around scatting because I don't want to, I've heard some bad scatting that's like, maybe you should have just sung some words there. but it came off really good. And that was done in one take. So really? I did one take scatting we just kept it. Cause I shook it out and was like, I'm not going to think too much about this. And we just did it. And there's a cool little bit there where we decided to do trading fours with drums.
What a great idea.
Right. Look at that. Like
somebody should name a podcast Trading Fours.
That was fun. And then Is You Is or Is You Ain't. I've been doing that song since back in like when I was with a blues band quite a few years ago. So that one's like, I've done that song many, many different ways. And Leslie's arrangement of that one is just killer, where it starts out with this sing-songy high, like, oh, I'm thinking about this man. And then we cut to this bop, bop, a top, bop, a top, a top, bop. And it kind of takes off. So I like the textures in that one.
That's great. Well, I really enjoyed it. I tell everybody, I actually, whenever I have somebody on, I listen to it while I jog. It's always just kind of, well, because then I won't get interrupted. You know, the phone always rings or a kid comes in and bugs me. But if I'm on my jog, like I've got 30 minutes uninterrupted where I'm going to be able to stuff. So I liked it a lot. It was a lot of fun. If people want to listen to it, Joanna, what's the best way? I know I found it on Apple, but what's the best way people can find it? Let's sell some albums for you.
Go to jazzjb.com. That is my website. I built it myself. Thank you very much. So enjoy. It's simple, but you can buy the album there. If somebody wants to buy the actual physical CD, I got a ton of them. That's also part of the experience. Sometimes people miss out on, you know, you can download it and that's beautiful. But if you want a signed CD, anyone who's ordering from my website, I will sign it and even write a little message.
Yeah.
And mail it to you personally. So that's my little touch there, but you can also download it, there, just to download if that suits you better. And then also, Apple, Spotify, what else is there? iTunes. So if you have a favorite music provider, it should be there. If it's not, let me know.
That's great. Well, like I said, you know, COVID's a double-edged sword. I do think it's nice that I don't know if I would have found you. I don't usually hang out on Facebook much just because I kind of hate Facebook in a way, you know, because people are mean and that. But I was just, you must have shared it on the Jazz page or something. And I saw it and I was like, well, let's check this out. And you guys were great and I enjoyed it. And so, it, you know, in that case, it worked out well. And I tell everybody this, and I mean it with all sincerity, when we get the all clear, and I know we may have to wait for, what'd you call it? Baby Bean Birkabile, what'd you call your kid?
The Berkey Bean.
The yeah. Berkey Bean. Thank you.
But I still call her Berkey Bean.
That's great. But once you're done and, you know, you've recovered and we've recovered and you're out playing, I would love to come out and see you and meet your band and say hello.
Well, we are hoping to do an album release party. I'm anticipating, I mean, the holidays are upon us.
Right.
So early 2021, mm-hmm. we're just trying to figure out how to do that in a safe way that what will actually be fun. I really didn't want to do just an online thing because, I don't know, it just wasn't the experience that I wanted. I want to actually do the live thing, but I will let you know.
Yes, and please do.
Please, you know, go on Facebook, facebook.com/JB Jazz Quartet. And then if you like the page, then I post any updates on there too. That's just an easy way to stay updated with anything that's happening.
Absolutely. And I'll put all those links in the show notes. So people listening to this on their podcast, you can scroll down, you can click on that link and you're good to go. So I appreciate the time.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, yes, I love him. I'm gonna walk right up to his gate.
Joanna Birkabile, everybody. And the Birkabean. I always love first-time parents. It's so exciting. It's just, until you have a kid, you just don't, you know. It's just, it changes everything. So that's great. Congratulations to her and to her husband. And someday, hopefully, I get to meet the Birkabean. But I won't let my wife get too close because she'll get ideas about other kids. So we're way too old for that. Anyways, seriously, thanks, Joanna. That was great. I really enjoyed it. And be sure, she's got this new album out, Love Me or Leave Me, like she said. And this is one of the tracks on it. The opening track was on it as well. Great band. So much fun. So it's her quartet with Jerry Pollock on drums, Leslie McLean on piano, and Tim Brewer on bass. And this is a fun album. On the show notes, you can see how you can order it, and Joanna will sign it and send it to you. Give you something to listen to over the holidays. So that's going to do it for today's Trading Fours. And I got a bunch of people on deck for next month into the holidays, but I don't know which order I'm going to do them, so mum's the word for now, but you're going to like it. We're going to go everywhere from jazz pianist to a rock and roll bassist to a country guitarist and a year end of year show. I mean, that's a lot. I'm busy. So check all that out. We'll put that in the show notes. And also I will let you know that I'm actually working on some fun non-traditional Christmas tunes that I'm going to put up on SoundCloud too. So I'll send a link to that next time too. So thanks again to Joanna. That's going to do it for this episode of Trading Fours. Remember, if you're in India, shoot me an email. I want to hear how somebody halfway around the world is interested in what's going on with the Kansas City music scene. But until next time, go out and support live music, either in person or virtually. And we'll talk real soon. Bye-bye. Baby, baby.